In her essay on the first of our Unitarian Universalist principles, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, the Reverend Sarah Lambart writes, "I had grown up in a church that believed individuals were fallen beings, weakly repeating a liturgy that confessed my unworthiness to even pick up the crumbs at the foot of God's table. I had lost my sense of being at home in the denomination of my childhood." She goes on to say that when she discovered Unitarian Universalism and visited a church, she soon realized that here there would be no discussion of unworthiness. Instead, our inherent worthiness as human beings was emphasized. She says about that church she visited, "That Sunday morning, I found myself literally crying with relief to find a community of faith I could belong to, a place where I could bring my doubts, my questions, my confusion, and still be accepted. I heard clearly the church's unspoken message, 'Come as you are and be welcome. Here you can be yourself. Here you can continue the journey.' On this first Sunday of the church year, that's our message to you. You are not unworthy, but possess inherent worth and dignity. Come as you are and be welcome. Here you can be yourself. And with the support of this community, continue the journey of spirit, of mind, and of heart."
Good morning. I am so happy to be back here, and I'm so happy to see all the old faces and a few new ones, too. I have a story written by Emily Kingsley, and it's called Like Me. "I went to my dad, and I said to him, 'There's a new kid who's come to my school. He's different from me, and he isn't too cool. No, in fact, he's nothing at all like me, nothing at all like me. He runs in a funny, jerkyish way, and he never comes first in a race. Sometimes he even forgets which way is first base. And he's nothing at all like me, nothing at all like me. He studies all day in a separate class, and they say that it's called special ed. And sometimes I don't understand what he said. And he's nothing at all like me. Nope, nothing at all like me. And his talking is sometimes so slow, and it makes me feel funny. And there's one thing I know. He's nothing at all like me. Nope, nothing at all like me. But my father said to me, 'Son, I want you to think, when you meet someone different and new, that he may seem a little bit strange, it's true, but he's not really very different from you. No, he's not very different from you.' And I guess I admitted, I've looked at his face. When he's left out of games, he feels bad. And when other kids tease him, I can see he's so sad. I guess that's not so different from me. No, that's not very different from me. And he sings just like me, right out loud. And when he gets his report card, I can tell he feels proud. And that's not very different from me. No, that's not very different from me. And I know in the lunchroom, he has lots of fun. He loves hot dogs and ice cream and fries. And he hates to eat spinach. And that's not a surprise, 'cause that's not very different from me. Nope, that's not very different from me. And he's always so friendly. He always says hi. And he waves and he calls out my name. And he'd like to be friends and get into a game, which is not very different from me. No, I guess it's not very different from me. And his folks really love him. I saw them at school. I remember on open school night. They were smiling and proud, and they hugged him real tight. And that's not very different from me. No, that's not very different from me. So I said to my dad, 'Hey, you know that new kid? Well, I've really been thinking a lot. Some things are different, and some things are not. But mostly, he's really like me. Yes, my new friends, a lot like me.'"
Thank you. our seven principles in story and verse, Ken Collier writes, "Consider then the first of these principles, that we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. It does not say the inherent worth and dignity of people with whom we may happen to agree, or whom we like. It says every person. It does not say the inherent worth and dignity of like-minded people, or people who are willing to enter into rational, civilized discourse with us. It does not say people with whom we may disagree, but who are as honorable and as genuine in their beliefs as we are in ours. It says every person. We are also called on to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of people whom we thoroughly dislike, people whom we find obnoxious, obstreperous, overbearing, and frightening, people whom we find abhorrent and whose beliefs and behavior we find disgusting, even people who would deny, silence, or destroy us. This principle calls on us to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and it does not admit exceptions. Please rise as you are able and join in singing hymn 113, Where is Our Holy Church?"
It's great to be starting another year with you, and so good to see so many new faces and the return of so many familiar ones. Some of you are well-versed in Unitarian Universalism, and others are quite new to it. So before I get to the focus of this morning's worship, I want to give you a bit of context. Unitarian Universalism is a faith that affirms and promotes shared principles and values, as opposed to a faith that is a set, rigid creed. A creed is a very specific text of beliefs that every member of the religion accepts. As a faith tradition which affirms your right to responsibly seek your own truth, we do not have a creed. Rather, we share certain fundamental values and principles. Now, these principles certainly have their roots in the teachings of the Hebrew Bible and of Jesus and his disciples, but also in the religions of the East, in Earth-centered traditions, in humanist philosophy, especially the ancient humanist Romans and Greeks, and in the ideas of both the Reformation and the Enlightenment. Even places as contemporary as the civil rights movement and the environmental movement of our own time have influenced the articulation of these principles. These principles have evolved over time and are not written in stone as unchangeable, like the Ten Commandments, for example, or the Nicene Creed. In 1803, the Universalists had the Winchester Confession. In 1887, the Unitarians created a document called The Things Most Commonly Believed Today Among Us. And in 1960, when the two denominations were merging, a set of common principles and purposes were articulated. These were revised in 1985 with changes in language, especially to make them more inclusive, and with the adoption of the seventh principle. This morning, as you came into church, our greeters gave you a bookmark. I hope if you missed getting one on your way in, please take one on your way out. It sets forth the seven principles on one side in rainbow of colors, and they're yours to take home with you. Over the next several weeks, we will explore these values that we have collectively and democratically concluded are what we as a faith tradition are called to affirm and promote in our time. And when we say that we affirm and promote these principles, it means that we strive to personally own them and we try to live by them. It also means that we bring them to the greater community and apply them to the issues of our time. In facing the issues of our time, we must again and again ask that question that we just sang. Where is our holy church? Or to put it another way, how do the principles help guide us as we think about and act upon the issues of our time? So let's turn to the first principle that we say we affirm and promote, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. You know, it's easy to jump to those words worth and dignity, but it's the word inherent that really distinguishes us from other traditions. It's the word inherent that makes the first principle profoundly theological. In many religions, the human being is considered inherently unworthy, born in original sin, in need of redemption. Religions that advance this theology often consider their followers saved or the chosen people, and consider others inferior, even sometimes damned for their failure to accept certain beliefs. Our tradition rejected that idea a couple of hundred years ago when we professed that a spark of the divine is in every person. We don't deny that people are capable of doing bad things, but we say that at the core of every individual, inherently there, is a person of worth and dignity. Children are not born in original sin, but with goodness waiting to be cultivated by love. In our faith tradition, there are no chosen people and no damned people. Our universalist forebears made that very clear when they taught, in their time, a loving God damns no one. Here, you are not better or worse. You are not saved or damned because you believe in a certain way. Yes, we all stray from acting from the best part of ourselves, but we're not called to constantly confess our unworthiness, but we are called to connect to that best part of ourself and live up to our inherent human potential. Moreover, we are called to treat others, and that, as we heard earlier, the reading Evan shared, and that's all others, in a way that affirms their inherent worth and dignity. And when we do not do that, we ourselves are diminished. This fundamental teaching is indeed found in many of the world's religions. I love the Hindu greeting, Namaste. Do you know what it means? It means the divine in me honors the divine in you. Isn't that affirming your own inherent worth and dignity and honoring the inherent worth and dignity of another person? Buddhism would describe the inherent worth and dignity of an individual as the potential Buddha nature found in every being. And in Christianity and Judaism, saying that we are created in the image of God, we find another way of expressing the inherent worth and dignity of every individual. Well, it's one thing to understand the first principle on a philosophical and theological level, and it's another to apply it to our lives and our world. We're always faced with issues that call out to us to apply this teaching. But this summer, maybe because I was working on the sermon, but it seems that we've had more of them than ever. We began the summer, as we always do, with the Supreme Court announcing several major decisions. Perhaps most notable among them was the court's striking down of a law that was specifically written to deny that a certain group of people had equal worth and dignity. Of course, I'm talking about the court's decision striking down the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, as it's called. What a different time it is for gay men and women growing up today than when I was growing up. When I was a young man just discovering that I was gay, the message that I was constantly bombarded with was one of my own unworthiness. Many gay men of my generation, me included, grew up with what is often known as the best little boy in the world syndrome. That is, thinking that because you're gay, because you have this judgment of worthiness upon you, you have to constantly be better. You have to constantly do more in order to compensate for that. I was told directly or indirectly on many occasions as I grew up that who I was sinful, evil, even damned for simply being who I was. It's still a real struggle, and some don't make it. So many religions then, and sadly many are still, promoting a view of gay people that denies their inherent worth and dignity. But not this one. I'm proud to be a member of a faith tradition that has officially recognized the inherent and equal worth and dignity of gays, lesbians, bisexuals, transgender, questioning folks for a long time. In many traditions, even today, I would be considered unworthy to be a member, much less a minister. But we ordained our first openly gay clergy 50 years ago. as a faith tradition, we have spoken out and taken the lead in the public debate on this issue, and joining with others, and many of them other religious institutions, the message of our first principle has been heard. There's still a way to go for full equality for GBLT folks, but this decision by the court was, in fact, a huge step forward in affirming and promoting that inherent worth and dignity. But not all the first principle news of this summer was as rosy. What about the same court's decision in the voting rights case, striking down a law that helped to protect the equal worth and dignity of folks in the voting process by allowing closer oversight of the process in places with a strong history of racially biased voter disenfranchisement? What about the shocking jury verdict in the Trayvon Martin case? A young boy coming from buying candy and a soda, talking to his girlfriend on a cell phone, is killed. And the man who did it walks out of the courtroom scot-free because of a law that allows an individual to stand his ground and kill another human being, even if he could easily and safely have walked away. Standing your ground laws, which have proliferated in the last few years in our country, themselves, in and of themselves, stand in opposition to the idea of the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Every young black man in this country constantly deals with the fact that even in the eyes of the law, he's essentially seen as unworthy, even as a suspect. You know, this congregation is a supporting member of the Unitarian Universalist Urban Ministry. And each day after school, many black Roxbury teenagers come and engage with mentors and teachers who do different things, but who basically do one thing: affirm their inherent worth and dignity. But we know all too well, because it's happened, that they can walk out on the street and end up like Trayvon Martin, because others do not. The decision of a brave federal judge striking down New York City's stop and frisk policy, which essentially was operating in a way that assumed a man of color was up to no good without any evidence of wrongdoing, was a victory for the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And just a couple of weeks ago, was it, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. But the people who were in Washington really weren't there for a party, but to remind us that there are still issues of grave inequality in many places where the inherent worth and dignity of some is not being affirmed and promoted. Did you see that wonderful 8-year-old boy speak and later be interviewed? He asked, "How come in my school there are 39 kids in my class and I don't have a teacher who can help me when I have a question, and there are 20 kids in a class in the white part of town and they do? How come?" Because the community does not truly accept the equal and inherent worth of every child. How come, I'll ask, is higher education becoming more and more something only the rich can afford for their children? How come? Because we're not affirming the equal and inherent worth and dignity of all children and youth. How come our Congress was incapable of passing a DREAM Act? How come? Because they failed to recognize the inherent worthiness of those children, though born in another country, who were here by no fault or decision of their own. You know, the debate about immigration in this country essentially is one about inherent worth and dignity. Should what side of the border you're born on determine whether or not you are deemed worthy and your dignity is respected? As you heard this morning, our offering is being split with the Concord Prison Outreach Program. In my former career as a lawyer, I regularly went to our jails and prisons. I often had to go in the evening because I was usually in court during the day. Things are quiet in prisons at night, and I often had time to really talk with my clients. And what I learned from those men and women who had been held behind bars, some for months, some for years, was the way our prison culture really punishes them is not by the loss of freedom, as you might think. It is by the denial of their inherent worth and dignity. No one does not rehabilitate a person by constantly denying their inherent worth and dignity. What programs like Concord Prison Outreach do and others is help prisoners rediscover their worth and dignity. And think about it, the situation in Egypt, the horrible situation in Syria, the general problem of terrorism, they all involve the denial of the inherent worth and dignity of some group of people. What I hope you see is that this principle of ours is constantly being challenged, and that the voice of this faith that proclaims from its theological core that everyone, no exception, has inherent worth and dignity needs to be heard again and again and again. Okay. But what about closer to home in our personal lives? Does this first principle apply there? You bet it does. It applies in our relationship with even just one other person, or even internally with respect to how we think about ourselves. In those opening words that I shared with you this morning, Sarah Lambert reminded us of how many, probably most of us, have been made to feel unworthy. Have you? I suspect in some way, at some time. I have, and I know, like most of you know, that that can be very hurtful and damaging. And on the other hand, we, intentionally or unintentionally, have probably failed to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of another. You know, I was so drawn into the message for all ages this morning, for that child being talked about in the story could be my 6-year-old niece who has Down syndrome. In the first year of her life, it was just so easy to think of her as less than her sister. But as her personality emerged and her feisty spirit and determination came clear, her differences began to fade away. Last week at a birthday party, she came up to me to show me a chart of 100 words that she could write. She went to summer school all summer so she could qualify to go to regular first grade. It was really unclear if she was going to be able to do that. But she did. I know when others look at her, they see a child with Down syndrome. I used to. I don't anymore. And I know many of you know what I'm talking about. You have children or grandchildren or siblings who have similar challenges. And you've come to see the same inherent worth and dignity of them in them as you do in every other child. You know, often these kids are really our teachers of this principle. Our failure to live this principle is found in so many places. Bullying in our schools is all about denying another person's inherent worth and dignity. Abusive behavior, whether it's verbal or physical, is all about not recognizing the inherent worth and dignity of the other person. We often think less of people who believe differently or whose politics are different from ours. We often make unfounded judgments about someone who is differently able than we are. We sometimes act in condescending ways towards the poor or the less educated. We all fall short at times in truly living up to these principles. And when we do, we are diminished. The first principle tells us that at the most profound level, everyone is equal. No matter how far they've strayed, how much they've hurt us, how much we disagree with them, they're still worthy of our respect and even more of our love. You know, you could express the core message of the first principle this way. Every human being is worthy of love and capable of love. There are times when it's very hard to make that leap, to love the prisoner, the abuser, the annoying, nasty person, the person who's advancing ideas you really detest. As Ken Collier reminds us, this principle calls us to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and it does not admit exceptions. On this journey, love will be our guide. If there is hope for the world to reconcile itself, it is the kind of love we feel for each other when we recognize the inherent worth and dignity of every person that will get us there, and nothing else will. This first principle calls us to more than acceptance, more than justice, more than fairness, more than compassion or pity, more than righteousness. It calls us to say that inherently and without exception, you and I and everyone have the same inherent worth and dignity. And on every issue that faces our world, and in every action, interaction we have with another person, we must act accordingly. It's a lot to ask. But every time you affirm the inherent worth and dignity of another person, it will change your life and change this troubled world for the better. So I end with that Hindu greeting, Namaste. The divine in me honors the divine in you.